Aches v'chi rivun anoshim, when two people are fighting, v'hi koish esrael be'evenoi be'groi, v'lo yamus v'nafal mishko, and you hit someone either directly with your fist or with a stone. In other words, it doesn't make any difference whether you hurt someone with your body or with a stone, which is not your body, but it's your strength. And the person is hurt. Im yokum v'hishalech b'chutz al mishantoy v'niko amake. When is the person who did the damage exempted from responsibility? Only once the victim comes back to his original healthy state. Rak shifto yitein, but you have to pay him for the shevis, and that was for not working. The rapo yirapei. So the Gemara says that from here we learn out that there are five payments that you have to pay if you damage someone. You have to pay nezek, right? You have to pay what you damage, nezek, right? And how do you figure nezek? In a imaginary slave market, right? That's what you have to figure, right? Let's say you broke his finger. So in an imaginary slave market, if you would own him, how much less would it be worth after you damaged him? So that difference is the nezek, right? The value of the broken finger in the market. Tsar, right? You have to pay him for how much it hurts. How do you do that? So says the Gemara, how much would you pay to have, let's say if somebody has to break your finger for an operation or something, how much would you pay to do it without pain? Right. So that is the payment for pain. Tsar.
How much would pay
the victim? You know, it's a person. How much would you pay to have it done with pain or without pain? Right? and ripui is the payment to the doctor. How do we learn out payment from to the doctor? Because it says here in the Pasuk Yutes, verapoi yirapei, verapoi yirapei, and he should be cured. So what is the meaning of the sentence, he should be cured? Of course he should be cured. I mean, that's the whole point. Says the Targum Unkus, if you take a look at the Targum Unkus, Pasuk Yutes, the last, vaagar asio, asio in Aramaic is doctor, vaagar asio, the payment for the doctor yishalein, and that's what Rashi says, ketargumoy, that's how, what the meaning of the word verapo yirapei means. Verapo yirapei means you must pay the doctor. Now it's the damager has the obligation to pay the doctor. This is very difficult because in the Shulchan Aruch it's brought down in Yoredeye Simen Shin Lamed Vov Halacha bet, says like this. Harofe, a doctor, osur litol sechar hachochmo ve'alimut. The doctor is not allowed to take money for his knowledge. He's not allowed to take money for his knowledge. Avol sechar hatoreach ve'habatolo muter. But he's allowed to take money for schara batola, like it says by teaching Torah, right? You're not allowed to take money for teaching Torah, but you're allowed to take money because you're not doing something else at the time, right? Because it takes you effort to come to the place where you teach. So that's why you're allowed to take money, but because for the Torah itself, you're not allowed to take money. So here says the Shulchan Aruch, the same thing is with a doctor. A doctor is not allowed to take money, but if he takes money for his effort, or for not doing something else, and in the meantime, then it's okay, then he's allowed to, right? On the surface, this sounds like a legal loophole. That's 100% okay, but it's a loophole. Really, the doctor shouldn't take any money at all, right? So, says the Shah here, Osur, why is it that a doctor is not allowed to take any money? The Avedas Gufo he. Because after all, what are you doing when you are a doctor? You are returning a lost object. You are fulfilling a mitzvah. What is the mitzvah? Hashovas avedo. Returning a lost object. So you're going to say, yes, but it's not a lost object. It's health. Lost health is not any worse, he says, than a lost object. So therefore, he says, the avedas gufo yivarachmono ombro v'hashevoy soloi. The rabbis Aveidas Gufoy, of course, that includes Aveidas Gufoy. If a person loses $5, you have to return to him. And you can't take any money for the mitzvah of returning the $5. So if you are returning his health, so much more so that you can't take any money. Yeah.
Is the health his?
Is the money that I'm returning a person who lost $5, is it mine? I'm helping you get it back.
Right, well, that's what I'm saying. The money belongs to the person that lost it, but does the health belong to him?
As much as if I can help him, right, get back something that he lost, why shouldn't I? I mean, his health, what do you mean, does he own it? What do you mean if he owns it or not, right? It's a question, if a person's finger, your hand, do you own your hand or is it your hand? Good. But if it's your hand, it's at least as much of a mitzvah as if you own it. You know, what I'm trying to say is, it's irrelevant whether your health is yours or not, right? But it's your health. You understand what I'm saying? You know, it may not be something that you own, but it's more than if you own it. You understand? That's what he says.
But this is somebody who's born with a defect or a built-in deficiency that will show up when he's 30.
Right.
If he had a gold coin under his pillow, it would still be there 100 years later. But the built-in deficiency is going to make itself known, and he will die, Chas v'Shalom, of cancer at 30.
Yeah.
Because so he never had that health to begin with.
So, right. I mean, but, you know, so how can you call it, you mean, hashovo of something that you never had?
Possible.
Okay. Good. So I could tell you, fine. I mean, he's talking like this when a person, right, hit a finger and somebody went over and broke his finger, and then it's Hashova Saveda. I would say that it's not so, that Hashova doesn't necessarily mean to give you back something that you had and you lost, right? Something that you could have had and you never had, right? It's also a mitzvah of Hashova Saveda. Hashova's Gufo, you know, to return his health. That's what I would have said. But if you will insist that it's not, fine, but that's not the case in the Torah. I'm saying the truth of the matter is the mitzvah of the doctor. I mean, a doctor will definitely be fulfilling his mitzvah of Hashova, the way the Shach learns, that the mitzvah of Hashova's Gufo, you're returning his health, even if it's health that he never had. Right? Because he's doing something for the other person. I mean, he's giving him something that he needs. That's also a getter of Hashova's Gufo. Now, comes out according to this then, that ideally the doctor shouldn't take any money. Right, like again, I don't know if I read the next shah. He says, and how do we know that he's not allowed to take money? He says, because it says concerning all the mitzvahs, ma ani bechinom. Right, God says to man, I did you favors for nothing. I didn't take any money when I gave you the Torah, for instance. Af itchem atem bechinom. So when you help someone else, ma hu afat, you should also do the same thing. You shouldn't take any money. Okay. So. Comes out that ideally he shouldn't take any money, right? So we found a loophole. Yes, you can't take because you could be doing something else. But how does it make sense that the Torah should say like this? When a person gets hurt, the person who hurt him has to pay for the doctor's bills. But the doctors are not allowed to take any money. In other words, how can the Torah be talking about a situation that goes against the Torah? You hear the question? In other words, how can the Torah tell you pay the doctor's bills when we know the doctors are not allowed to take any money? Of course you can say, well, maybe the Torah is talking about a Gentile doctor who doesn't have such a restriction, right? Or maybe the Torah is talking about a doctor that takes money not for curing but for not doing something else. Fine, but as we said, that's not the simple interpretation. The simple interpretation is that you must pay the doctor. Even though it's a Jew who wants to do the right thing, you should pay the doctor. But the Jewish doctor is not allowed to take any money. You hear the problem? So it says like this. The point is like this. There is no question about it that when you are a doctor, right, and you are curing someone, right? So what's the idea that the Torah said don't take any money for it? Is it that the Torah is telling you don't benefit from a mitzvah, There's a point. You are doing a mitzvah, you're not allowed to benefit from a mitzvah. That's one possibility. Or the concept is completely different. It's not that Torah says don't benefit from a mitzvah. It's another point. The point is like this. This poor victim, he got sick, right? Or he lost an object, he lost his $5. So on top of that, you want to abuse his tsar, his bad situation, and take money away from him too? The Torah says that that's inhuman. When you are a person lost his health, so you even want him to pay for it? Right? Poor guy, he lost his health, he's in trouble. So, and you can do him the favor and give him back the health. So you want to take from the victim money? Do you hear this second way of looking at it? It's not so much the benefiting from the mitzvah. No, that's not what the Torah worries about. Don't benefit from the mitzvah. The Torah doesn't want you to abuse a person's situation. It's like you're abusing his bad situation. You not only did he lose his health, now he should have to pay for it too. You're abusing his bad situation. You hear the second way? If we are going to accept this second reason why you are not allowed to take money for being a doctor, then what would you say if the situation is like this? A hit B, right? Now B is hurt. Who are you going to be taking the money from? Huh? A, of course. Not B. So when A is going to pay you for the bill, you are allowed to take lechatchila without any loopholes that you are allowed to take to start with. You hear the point? In other words, what the Shulchan Aruch is saying, don't take money for being a doctor, the Shulchan Aruch means don't take money from a victim, right? Don't abuse his bad situation. It's bad enough that he's hurt. You have to take money on top of that? You have to help him. But the case in the Torah is not when a person gets sick. The case in the Torah is when a person hurts another person. When there is a damager, you have the obligation to do a favor to the damager and not charge him money? There is no such an obligation. What the Shulchan Aruch means, you have the obligation to help the person in trouble. You're not helping the person in trouble by not charging him. He wouldn't have had to pay anyway. That's the pshat. The Torah is telling you, v'chi yirivu nanashim, when people are fighting, then verapo yirapei, then the doctor is allowed to take money because the damager is paying. That's fine. When isn't he allowed to take money? When you're abusing the victim's bad situation, that's when the Torah says don't take any money. That answers the problem with the Shulchan Aruch. Now, one more thing. The Gemara says more. Verapo yirapei, the Gemara says mikan. From here we learn out that a doctor can cure. That a doctor can cure. In other words, if the Torah wouldn't have said verapo yirapei, we might have thought that you are not allowed to go to a doctor or become involved in medicine. Right? Why is that? Why would we have thought that you are not allowed to go to a doctor? Following what the Shach says, that the idea of being a doctor is the mitzvah of Hashovas Gufoy, like Hashovas Aveidu, a return of lost health, right? If so, even if the Torah wouldn't have said Verapo Yerabei, I would have known that you are allowed to be a doctor, right? Because you, the same way that you have to return a lost object, you have to return lost health. Remember, that's what the Shach says. Where does the prohibition to take money for a doctor come from? Because you are returning lost health. So if so, the mitzvah of returning a lost object, that includes returning lost health, tells you, you should be at some mitzvah to be a doctor. So if so, how can the Gemara say that if it wouldn't say the words verapo yirapei, I wouldn't know that you are allowed to go to a doctor? Why not? Why would be the other minute that you are not allowed to go to a doctor? So, in the Gemara in Bobe Kame, the Pei Hei in Bobe Kame, there is a Tosos, very important Tosos. Tosos says like this, Shenitno Reshus, it's on this Gemara that I'm quoting, Shenitno Reshus Lerofer Lerapos. From here we know, from this Pasuk that we just quoted, we know that you are allowed to, that a doctor is allowed to cure, that you're allowed to be a doctor. Says Tosos like this. There are two problems here, you see, because The Torah learns it out, the rapo yirape, the double expression, rapo yirape, the double expression, says Tosos. Vim tomar, vehome rapo lechudisha minolei. Why do you need a double expression, rapo yirape? Says Tosos, v'yesh lomar, listen carefully, it's an incredible Tosos. V'yesh lomar, dehave amine. If the Torah wouldn't have said a double expression, the Torah would have only said, verapo, just that, you're allowed to go to a doctor. I would have said I can only go to a doctor when somebody, another human being, hurts the other human being. Then I would have said, listen, you can't say that it was destined that I should be hurt, right? You hurt me. I didn't get sick naturally. You hurt me. So therefore, since you hurt me, you can't say that it was destined because you hurt me. So therefore, I would be allowed to go to a doctor. But if a person develops a sickness that wasn't caused by another human being, so I would have thought, if I would go to a doctor, it's as if I am going against God's will. Here. If the Torah wouldn't have said the double expression, rapoy rapay, I would have said, you are allowed to go to a doctor when you are hurt by another human being. But when you are hurt, because bidei shamayim, you got sick, nobody's fault, you just got sick, so what right do you have to go to a doctor? God wants you to be sick, and you say, no, God, I'm not going to be sick. What right do you have? That's why the Torah comes and tells you an enormous novelty, an enormous chiddush. Even so, you're allowed to go to a doctor. But without the Torah telling you, you wouldn't be allowed to. Now, this Tosos is extremely difficult. Extremely difficult, because what Tosos is telling you is that when a person gets sick naturally, not caused by another human being, then you can say it was destined, right? Except the Torah tells me, even if it is destined, you still have a right to go to the doctor. But the idea is it was destined. It's Tosos calls it Gzeiras HaMelech, the decision of the king. In other words, destined, right? But if somebody hurts you, then it's not destined. That's what Tosos is saying. If somebody hurts you, that you can't call Gzeiras HaMelech, it's not destined.
Hashem used them as a tool to hurt me.
Exactly. Exactly. What's Tosos talking about? In what way does a natural sickness differ from a sickness caused by another human being? Maybe that other human being was just used as an agent, the same way that the bacteria was used as an agent and the virus was used as an agent. What difference does it make, excuse me, whether a virus hurts you or another human being hurts you? Do you hear the incredible difficulty of Tosos? Yeah? And the answer is, some of you may remember it, we mentioned in Parshas Vayeshev, a very, very important netziv in the Amek Dovor. It says like this, the netziv. When the brothers of Yosef decided, listen carefully, when they decided that instead of killing Yosef themselves, right, they'll throw him into a pit full with venomous snakes, right? Why did they do that? What difference does it make whether you kill someone or you throw him into a pit with venomous snakes? What difference does it make? Says the Amek Dovor, it makes an enormous difference, because the idea is the following. If Yosef is a perfect tzaddik, right? If Yosef, just in case he's a perfect tzaddik, maybe we are wrong, and he is right. Maybe Yosef is right. Right. So definitely, the venomous snakes will not hurt him if he doesn't deserve it. But if we kill him, that's no proof at all that he's innocent. And he says the following words, because man's free will can overcome the hashgoche, the gzeiras hamelech, the destiny. Man's free will can sometimes, the additional word sometimes is mine, sometimes it can overcome destiny. In other words, Maybe he's not destined to die. Maybe he doesn't deserve to die. Therefore, the snakes won't kill him. But if a human being decides to kill him, the human being's free will overcome the person's destiny. You hear the amygdala? Incredible chidush. I don't know if you realize the enormous novelty of the idea of the amygdala. Right? That there is an enormous difference. If a person dies because somebody killed him, right? You can't say, well, it was destined. If he dies because venomous snakes bit him and killed him, then yes, then you can say, yes, it was destined. Why?
Even if someone put him in a position...
Exactly, exactly. Because if he would be 100% innocent, the venomous snakes wouldn't touch him. But a human being who directly kills him, a man's free will, my free will can overcome his destiny. Now, that not everybody agrees with this amygdala is clear from, for instance, the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch, when he gives the reason why you are not allowed to take revenge, right? When he gives a reason for lo sikol, not to take revenge, he says, you know what the reason why you shouldn't take revenge? Because what is the idea of revenge? Somebody came over to you and hurt you, right? And you're going to take revenge. You hurt me, I'll hurt you back. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, you are really saying that if he wouldn't have hurt you, you wouldn't have gotten hurt. That's why you are taking revenge, right? But that goes against our belief in God. Because obviously if you got hurt, it's because God wanted you to get hurt. The man who hurt you is only an agent of God, says the Chinuch. Therefore, how can you take revenge on the person? He's only an agent of God. If he wouldn't have hurt you, somebody else would have hurt you. You hear the Sefer HaChinuch? What is the implication of a Sefer HaChinuch? That even something done by another human being is only as an instrument of destiny. Not that his free will can overcome destiny. No. His free will can only be an instrument of destiny, Sefer HaChinuch. So it's obvious that the Sefer HaChinuch disagrees with the principle of the amygdala, right? But the amygdala says it, okay? That a man's free will can overcome Gzeras HaMelech, the decision, the destiny, right? Now, what I'm saying is that this Tosfos is 100% backing, a proof for the Amidovar, 100%, against the Chinuch. In other words, the Machlokes, the idea of the Amidovar is an idea that was already argued by among Rishonim between the Chinuch and the Tosfos. How? Because that's the whole point that Tosfos says. If somebody hurts you, right, then you can understand. You go to a doctor. That you don't need any special chidush that you go to a doctor. Of course, if somebody hurts you, you have to go to a doctor. You can say, but God wanted you to get hurt. How do you know that God wanted you to get hurt? He wanted you to get hurt. What does Tosfos imply? That if he wanted me to get hurt, it can go even against what God wanted. Do you hear clear? Therefore, I can go to a doctor. But if a virus made me sick, then it's for sure God. So how can I go to a doctor? So it's 100% proof that Tosfos argues with the principle of the Chinuch. That when another human being, when one human being hurts another human being, that is not something that you can say, that is destined. Not at all. That is free will, not destined. Therefore, it's obvious that you can go to a doctor. Because if it's not destined, then going to a doctor will not be contradicting God's will. It's not God's will at all. He hurt me, not God. But maybe if a virus hurt me, maybe that's God. So therefore, how can I go to a doctor? For that, I need a special chidush. So it's beyond a doubt that what Tosfos is telling you is the principle of the amygdala in Parshas Vayeshev. That the concept of free will, that man's free will can overcome Zera Samelech. You know, it's even if God's will was not that I should get hurt, a person's choice to hurt me may overcome it. Right?
Still God's will. If it wasn't God's will, then
I'm not telling you, of course.
The person would have taken a wrong turn. And
there is such a thing as God's will that I should not get hurt. That's something else. Now, we have to all accept, and the Amidovar says it at the end. What about when it's God's will that he should not get hurt, so of course, no matter how many guns you're going to shoot against him, it won't work. But that's not what we're talking about. We are saying if he does get hurt, does that mean that that was God's will that he should get hurt? Here there's an in-between. It could be that it was not God's will that he should get hurt. But there is no will of God. He should not get hurt. You hear the in-between, right? You hear the point that, you understand what I'm saying? Of course, if it would be God's will that nothing should hurt him, he would have been saved. But that you need a specific will of God that he should not get hurt. It's not enough that there should not be a will of God that he should get hurt. Maybe there is, you understand what I mean? I mean, it could be that God did not decide that he should get hurt, and he'll get hurt anyway. Right? In other words, God did not decide that Yosef should die, but if the brothers kill him, he'll die anyway. Right? Or like Toso says, God didn't decide that his arm should be broken, but if somebody broke his arm, he'll be broken anyway. Even though there is no specific decision from God. You understand what I'm saying? Okay? That goes against the chinuch. Because according to this principle, you can't say anymore the reason the chinuch gives for not taking revenge. Right? You can say, don't take revenge because it must have been God's specific will that you should break your arm. Can't say that. If you say that man's free will, right, has nothing to do with God's will, then you can't say that he's only an instrument of God's will. How do I know? Right? So there is an obvious machlokes, difference of opinion between the chinuch and Tosos over here. Yeah.
I mean, even though we get an internal natural disease, we're still allowed to go to the doctor.
That's a chidush. That's a chidush because that you can say, if I got sick, obviously that's God's will. Because it's something natural. There is no one's free will caused my sickness. So for that I need a chidush. And that chidush the Torah says, but without it. Remember, our original question was, what do you need a special chidush? Obviously you can go to a doctor. It's not obvious at all that you can go to a doctor.
Why is natural sickness just, again, another instance of absence of God's will? In other words, God didn't prevent the viruses from developing.
Listen, I'm telling you, no. In other words, everything is God's will, except when human free will is involved. That's what the Amigdomer says. Human free will is given the power to overcome, right, God's decision.
So what does that mean? I mean, what does that mean, that we can control God?
God created. In other words, God left in us the power that we should be able to overcome his decision. He gave us that power. I mean, of course, we wouldn't have had the power without God giving it to us. But that's what God gave us. The power to overcome his decision. In other words, he can decide. I mean, he may not have decided that we should be hurt.
But we can influence God.
100%. That's what I said. Those are the words of the Amigdomer. Man's free will can overcome, right? Like Tosos says, Gzeiras Melech, the decision of God. Gzeiras Melech, that's what Tosos uses. Yeah.
So if a person stays in good shape and goes to the doctor once a month for checkups, he's changing in a way, possibly.
Well, but it's okay. I mean, once the Torah tells you, then it's okay. I mean, again, don't forget, we are only talking the Hava minute. Tosos is just saying, if the Torah wouldn't have said you are allowed to go to a doctor, then what would we have decided? We would have said if it's a damage caused by another human being, we are allowed to go to a doctor because you can take it in your own hands. But if it's a natural sickness, we wouldn't be allowed to. Right? Comes the Torah, tells you, yes, you are allowed to go to a doctor. Okay? Now, by the way, you know the Ramban's opinion. The Ramban's opinion is that this is only for the average person. If you're an average human being, not a great righteous man, then you're allowed to go to a doctor. Of course, if you are one of those that has reached a level of faith in God, that you actually rely in God to cure you, then you are not allowed to go to a doctor. Ideally, what do you need a doctor for? Ideally, go to the source. Why do you go to the doctor? Because the Ramban's point of view, it's very consistent with his point of view. The Ramban says it the first time concerning something else. When Avram Avinu comes to Eretz Israel the first time, and he says, and then there was a drought in Eretz Israel, and he went to Egypt. Was he allowed to go to Egypt, or he wasn't allowed to go to Egypt?
Everybody says he was, but he's
not. Exactly. Everybody says that he was. The Ramban says he was not. Of course not. Why not? I mean, don't you have faith in God? God told you to come to Eretz Israel. Don't you have faith in God? In other words, if you are at a certain level then the circumstances should never affect your behavior. What do you mean there is a drought? So what? Wait, me. That's the Ramban Leshito so. That's Ramban following his own opinion that at a certain level, faith can take care of everything. Don't do anything. You don't have to do anything. Just rely on faith. So being consistent with this point of view, right? Why should you go to a doctor? Go to a doctor. It's like going to Egypt if there is a drought. The same principle that the Ramban uses to blame Avraham Avinu for having gone to Egypt, right? That's the principle he applies here for a person who goes to a doctor. He says, if you are at a very high level, don't go to a doctor. Of course. If you are not, then too bad. So, of course, you have to go to a doctor.
But what practical implications does that have? Even theoretical implications, if even Avraham would have had to have gone to a doctor in that instance. What does that mean for...
Let me tell you what he uses for it. He says, you know, there was a king in Yehuda called Oso, Melech Yehuda. There was a king called Oso. And it says in the Tanakh the following. It says, but when he got sick, he had some sickness in his legs. When he got sick, he went to doctors. In other words, he was a tzaddik. Except that when he got sick, he went to doctors. Says the Ramban, here it is. You see that a man like Oso, Melech Yehuda, shouldn't have gone to doctors. Right? That's what the Ramban said. I mean,
it was a mistake, or his faith was less than perfect.
You see that his faith was less than perfect. That's what how the Ramban sees the pasuk, right? The Rambam comments on the same pasuk that says, and also Melech Yehuda went to doctors, and he says he went like to witch doctors, right? He shouldn't have gone to witch doctors, right? That's what's wrong, because the Rambam holds out that according to halacha you are allowed to go to doctors. He argues with the Ramban. I mean, he holds differently than Ramban. But the Ramban Leshito so, according to his own opinion, right? He says that the reason why also wasn't perfect is because he went to a doctor. A perfect person doesn't have to go to a doctor, he says.
So according to the Ramban, Jews don't have a heter to go back to Kutzlaritz, even if there's...
If they are at that level, are at very high level, you should, right? And I saw a Chuve, it's incredible, I saw a Chuve, one of the letters of the Chazon Ish, right? A contemporary almost, right? And from the tshuva, from the answer, you can tell what he was asked. The answer says, well, I would advise you, yes, to go to a doctor. Because you shouldn't follow the Ramban unless you are absolutely sure you are at that level. Because in case you are not at that level, you are committing suicide. That's what he says. So you can imagine what the question was. Somebody asked him, right, maybe I shouldn't go to a doctor because to follow the Ramban. So the answer is in bag, be careful, because if you're not, you're fooling around with your health. Yeah.
Okay, are there people who don't have to go to doctors? I mean, are there real people who are living,
It's hard to say. From the Ramban, you see that there could be such people. You see, also Melech Yehuda, the king of Yehuda, was one of those people. Whether today there is such a person or not, I don't know. Right? But that theoretically there could be such a person. Okay? Now, in Pasuk Chof Gimel of chapter Chof Aleph, Vim Oson Iye, what about if someone gets killed, there is a fight and someone gets killed, Venosato Nefesh Tachas Nofesh. So Nefesh Tachas Nofesh, simple interpretation is, a life for a life, implying probably the simple interpretation, the death penalty, right? There's a simple interpretation. Ayin tachas ayin, right? Nefesh tachas nefesh. Ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, yod tachas yod, regel tachas regel. Says the Gemara, what does ayin tachas ayin mean? Ayin tachas ayin doesn't mean actually taking out an eye for an eye, but it means the payment, right? The payment for the eye, the value of the eye, you pay for the eye. And the reasons the Gemara, it's also here in the Gemara, Pei Dalet here in Bavli Kamei, the reason the Gemara gives, I mean the clearest reason, is it's simple, like the Gemara says, let's say one person sees for instance, the damager has a very good eye, good eyesight. And the victim had very weak eyesight. Right? So what kind of ayin tachas ayin can there be? If you take out an eye for an eye, that's not a fair exchange. Not an eye for an eye. Right? Or, let's say, A took out B's eyes. Right? If you're going to take out A's eyes, right, as a punishment, you're never sure. It's an operation. He may lose his life too. I mean, the Torah couldn't have given a punishment that would involve more than what he did. I mean, otherwise, it wouldn't be tachas ayin. So obviously when the Torah says ayin tachas ayin, it has to be something that we can measure exactly and say, for this you paid this amount. So that can only be money. That's how we know that ayin tachas ayin means money. Okay? The problem is, why would the Torah write it in such a way that it's on the surface it's misleading? Right? The Torah could have said simply, ayin ishalem ayin, shein ishalem shein. What does it mean? Why would the Torah write it in a way that could, on the surface, be interpreted as actually taking out an eye for an eye? So the Rambam says it in two places. The Rambam says it in Hilchos Chovel u'Mazik, he says it, and also in the Mora Nevuchim. In the Mora Nevuchim, when he gives the reason for the mitzvah, he says like this. What the Torah is telling you is the same way that you find by a rodef. A rodef, let's say, a person pursues another person. He loses the right to his life. He loses the right to his life. Because when the Gemara says a reason, if I tell you kill someone and if not I'll kill you, right? The Gemara gives a reason why you are not allowed to kill that person. Why not? Says the Gemara, how do you know, in the words of the Gemara, that your blood is redder, more red than the other person's blood? In other words, who said that you are more important than the other person? How can you kill him for yourself? Right? That's what the Gemara said. Therefore, don't do anything. Sheval tase. Don't do anything. And if you get killed, you get killed. Okay? But we find that, for instance, let's say the situation is the following. Let's say I can kill a person who is pursuing another person. Do I have a right to kill him? Or even a mitzvah to kill him? I have a mitzvah to kill him. Why? Why can't I say, listen, why should I kill one and save one? Let him kill him, so again, one person will be killed. What's the difference? And the problem becomes even more complicated. Let's say there are 10 people pursuing one innocent person. You hear? 10 people pursuing one innocent person. And I am in a perfect position to shoot all the 10 or the 100 in order to save the one. Do I say, well, after all, 100 is more than one? Or do I kill the 100 to save the one? The halacha is I kill the 100 to save the one, if there is no other way to save the one. I kill the 100 to save the one. What is the logic behind it? You can't say, how can one person is more important than 100? I mean, it's ridiculous. So what's the idea behind it? The idea behind it is, like I said, the pursuer loses the right to his life. And that we see from the Torah says, by Habob Machteres, in chapter 22, by Habob Machteres, the person who breaks into your house in the middle of the night and he's armed, you can kill him straight. You don't have to try to get away from him. You don't have to try to get. If you can kill him, you can kill him. You kill him. Here in chapter 20, Chobbe, the law of Habob Machteres, somebody breaks into your house, right? And all you have is $1. He can't steal, even if he wants to, more than $1. Right? Do you have the obligation to say, listen, for $1 I should kill him? Or do you have a right to say, I'll kill him, because I have a right to defend my dollar, and if I do, he might kill me because I see his arm, therefore I'll kill him first. What does the Torah say? You have a right to kill him first. How does that make sense? How can a human life be worth less than a dollar? How do we understand it? So the Torah puts it in such a way. When the Torah says that you're allowed to kill him, the Torah says, Ein lo domim. He has no blood. It's like a human being without blood. In other words, he loses the right to his life. Ein lo domim. His blood is not his. Meaning, you can put yourself into a situation that you lose the right to your own life. When you come to, when you break into somebody's house and you are ready to kill him if he defends his property, then you lose the right to your life. If you pursue an innocent person, you lose the right to your life. Therefore, when 100 people are pursuing one person, we don't have to weigh, are the 100 less important than the one? Ein lohem domim, they have no blood. Meaning, they lose the right to their lives. That's what says the Rambam. That's what the Torah means when it says, Ein tachas ein, an eye for an eye. The moment, the same way that if you threaten somebody's life, that means that you lost the sense of importance of a human life, then your life ceases to be important. If you damage somebody's eyes, then automatically you lose the right to your eyes. That, in other words, we're not saying that that's what the court should do to take out your eye. No, because it's impractical. We can't do it. But you should know, it's a moral lesson to you, that when you threaten somebody's, the same way that if you threaten somebody's life, you lose the right to your own life, when you threaten or you damage somebody's eye, you lose the right to your own eye. You break somebody's leg, you lose the right to your own leg. In other words, the Torah is telling you a moral lesson, that the value of what you have is measured according to how you appreciate what somebody else has. In other words, if you appreciate somebody else's life, then your life will be appreciated. That's how God will look at it, right? If you have no sense of the importance of the value of somebody else's eyesight, don't expect God to have any feeling for the value of your eyesight. You have lost the right to claim that my eyesight has value. That's what Ein Tachas Ein means. That's what the Rambam says in Mor Nebuchim. In other words, the Torah is telling you the moral idea behind damaging another person. Okay? Even though the actual payment is a payment of money, of course. Okay? That's how the Rambam learns. No, we'll stop here.